Hey, this is Rachel Bolan from Skid Row, and you're listening to Cobras and Fire. Remember, rock is not dead.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network, featuring special guests from Skid Row, Rachel Bolan. I'd like to welcome to the program Rachel Bolan, of course, of Skid Row. Rachel, what are you up to tonight?
Hey, man, just hanging out in my studio, doing a little bit of writing and, you know, keeping the cobwebs off.
Right on.
Enjoying the horrible weather.
Oh, what's it? Are you in Nashville right now? I guess I'm not sure where you're out of.
Yeah. I'm right outside of Nashville.
Okay.
And yeah, it's looking bleak right now.
Oh, is it, yeah. Like rainy or cold, or what do you got going on?
It's just miserable. It's like just raining, and it's but at least it's not humid.
Yeah, it was so enough.
Good this summer. It was brutal, man.
Yeah. Does that mean we're going to be hearing new music from Skid Row soon? I know there's been talk of basically the last installment of the Revolution series, right?
Oh yeah, we've been working on that. I'm just writing just to write, but okay. We've been working on that. We're actually going back in the studio on Monday to work on some more lead vocals and backup vocals and stuff like that.
How close are you to wrapping it up, if you don't mind me asking?
That's the question we're all asking ourselves. You know, it's we're getting to the point where we're choosing, you know, what songs are staying mm-hmm. and what songs are going, and a couple rewrites here and there. So I mean, it's not going to happen this year. But definitely in 2020, hopefully before the summer, maybe springtime. But every time I say that, it seems like it's even longer. So
you want to get it right. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a full-length record this time, so we want to make sure it's powerful.
Well, I'm guessing I'm not tipping you off to anything that you don't already know, but it's, of course, the 30th anniversary of the debut album this year.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Pretty crazy, huh? Who would have thought?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely in your target audience when that record dropped. I would have been 17 years old, living in a fucking farm town, you know? And that album really resonated with the teenage me. If I recall, that thing took off really quick.
It seemed like it once it started going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. We're here for you, man. Well, was there like a day and night kind of effect when for you, like before, like this is what my life was like before the record and then after, or was there a little bit of space there before you really got into high gear?
It's funny, your story about ZP has the same exact story because he's 10 years younger than us. So that would have made him like 15 when the album came out.
And, okay.
Or maybe even younger. And he has the same story. He's like, man, I listened to this in South Africa, and it just, you know, it did something to him. And it's pretty cool that now he's a singer for the band. But, yeah, when we wrote and wrote for, you know, Snake and I just every night, every single night, and even at work because we worked in the same place for a while, we'd write and write and write and write any chance we got. So, you know, it seemed like a really long process, but then – you know, the record came out, we were playing a club, we were playing in Stone Pony, and then the next week we were out with Bon Jovi playing Reunion Arena, or like a couple weeks, and the album came out the night that we played. And, you know, a few people heard it, and then within that week, when MTV was just slamming the Youth Gone Wild video, I'm like, wow. You know, you walk out and you go outside to have a cigarette or whatever, and it's just things were different, man. getting more and more different. And the biggest one for me was I was Christmas shopping in my hometown of Toms River, and I was at the Ocean County Mall and had to be escorted out by police. I was just sitting in my car and I was like, do I like this? I stopped in a shoe store to see my friend's dad and talk to him because I hadn't talked to him in a few months because we were on the road. And his store got filled up with a whole bunch of metalheads, and they had to take me out through the back. It was just really weird, man. Whenever I hear myself telling the story, it's even weirder.
I listened to it last night, kind of in preparation for this, and it really music has that ability to bring you back, you know. But
photographs and time, man.
Yeah, more than anything, but. It still sounds amazing. Like, it doesn't have that dated kind of production. It really just delivers. Some of the lyrics probably don't resonate like they did when I was 17, but for the most part, I mean, it's just such a solid record, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's something I'll always be very proud of.
Were you guys involved in the remaster at all? I haven't checked that out.
No, actually, we weren't. But, you know, it was cool that they did it. The only thing I was bummed about is it's only digital. And
right.
We'd really like it to come back out on vinyl and all the mediums, man. There's even – people are even buying cassettes again, which is pretty wild. So, you know, it would be really cool to hold it.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
180 gram in my hand of it. You know, it'd be cool.
Oh yeah, I would get that for sure, man. Well, what's the holdup?
I don't know. It was kind of out of our hands.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, and they put the marquee show on there, which was it's cool in a way. You know, it wasn't one of our greatest shows, but it was definitely a cool show.
Right on. You know, I've heard conflicting stories about. You guys happen to buy the name from Gary Moore. I have you online. Is that true or not? It's just one of those myths.
No, not true at all. We and this is no disrespect to Gary Moore or Rush or anyone, but we didn't know. We had no idea there was another Skid Row until the album came out. And there was like,
no internet. I'd never heard of the band until probably the mid-90s.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and then some of the guys became Thin Lizzy. And just to be honest, I'm a huge Thin Lizzy fan. But if you took me and about 20 of my friends from high school, it was probably two of us even knew who Thin Lizzy was. So, how was I supposed to know the precursor to Thin Lizzy? And Snake, the same thing. It's just like, it was impossible. There was no internet. They were never mentioned in magazines, and it was just the way it was. But yeah, we have the name trademarked, and, you know, there was a couple other Skid Rows too, but we used the name longer. You know, there was one guy who was, he was a lounge act. And I forget, he was from the Midwest, maybe by you somewhere. And his name was, his first name was Skid, and his last name was Rowe. That's what he went by. Kind of like a one-man band type of thing, you know. And he had it first.
You say that, and I'm imagining like that person with the big drum on their gut, and they got all these other instruments as they move their body.
The cymbals between their knees.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. Skid Row. So he had it first, and we did. He was like, "Man, I'm getting ready to retire." This is what was told us. He's like, "I'm getting ready to retire. Just cut me a check for a little bit of cash," and we did. And he was cool about it, but that was the only person that got paid on that name.
Thanks for clearing that up. You touched on Bon Jovi a little bit when we were getting started here. There's been a lot made of the involvement of John and Richie as far as your band at the beginning. Does that get sickening? Is too much made of that, or is that all like kind of all accurate? I guess how would you portray that?
Well, yeah, I mean the deal that was made. It was, you know, and not smart on our part, but publishing for a little while. And that was always the gray areas, like how long will he take our publishing? Anyway, that aside, John and Richie were a huge help in just you know, be careful of this, do this, try this, you know, and we listened to him because we respected them and still do. And we, you know, as far as writing songs, you know, John would be like, man, just bring it to me, you know, bounce it off me. And he'd be like, you know what? You should strengthen this part of this song. You should probably cut down some of the lyrics in this part. And it was a huge help, you know, because we were kids, man. We were kids. And it was really good to rely on someone that was having such, that had such huge success and that had experienced it all for us. And we trusted him, you know, we trusted both those guys. And it was a big help. I mean, if it weren't for Richie Sambora, we probably wouldn't have released 18 in Life as the second single.
Really?
Yeah, he was the one. He said, man, he goes, this is your song. Do that. It's not really a ballad, but it kind of is. And that seemed to be the pattern of how everyone was doing things. And it just resonated with
definitely
lots of people.
Still does, actually. Message is a lot. It's easy for people to relate to it. Almost any I don't know, background, you know.
Yeah, everybody knows a guy like Ricky. Can't get out of his own damn way, you know.
No doubt. Well, I assume Doc McGee came in through the Bon Jovi connection.
Yes, he came in, and once we had songs in place and everything, he said, "Okay, we're going to start shopping this," and we were a pen stroke away from signing with Geffen. And Atlanta came back in the 11th hour, and we went with them. Thank God.
Oh, really? You liked them over Geffen?
Well, man, Dorothy and Jason were courting us for so long, and they understood the band better than anyone. And Geffen kind of came in waving big bucks around, but didn't get the music whatsoever. Like, the A&R guy brought a producer and – to a showcase in New York, and it was just for them. It was at on a soundstage. It was just for them, and they scrapped all but two of our songs, and we had 30 of them. The only ones they wanted that they said were any good were 18 in Life and Making a Mess.
The
producer suggested playing Making a Mess halftime through the whole thing.
No, did he hear Youth Gone Wild? Or
heard them all, man. He heard the whole first album plus about 15 more songs.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, you can't get them all right.
Jake and I left that showcase like, this sucks.
I can't even imagine. Like, that song, I mean, the first time, almost everybody I know that heard that, it wasn't a grower, you know what I mean? It was like instant.
Yep.
All right, well. Well, I wonder do you know what that guy is doing nowadays?
I know what one of them is doing. I don't know what the other one is.
Okay. Well, let's move ahead a little bit here. You definitely knocked it out of the park with the second record. To me, Slave to the Grind is almost a I don't even know. It's basically a perfect album. Went heavier. Was that like by design or just kind of a natural next step?
It was definitely a natural progression, man. It I think it came out heavier because of the way we approached it, because when we were writing the songs, we didn't hear it being heavier than the first record. It's just times kind of shifted, the snare drum with, you know, a 9 second you know, decay on a verb, you know, that was gone. That those days were kind of over. And we kind of, I think we kind of spearheaded, like a lot of bands like us, just toughening up a little bit. And it was nothing like we sat down and said, okay, we're going to do it this way. It's just when we got to recording, we were experienced, you know, we'd seen the world a couple times. And when we wrote, we just wrote from a more experienced standpoint, you know. And when we got to the studio, we had new amps instead of our piece of shit amps that we had our whole lives. And, you know, we were able to buy new gear and get in there and spend some time. And you know, that's just how it kind of rolled out. And it was a lot drier effects-wise than the first record. And it just we stumbled onto something cool.
Yeah.
And you know, it's another one of those things where it's like, wow, man, you know. And we were lucky enough to debut at number one, the first metal band, hard rock band to do so. And that's something that you can, you know, only one person could be number one at something. And mm-hmm. we that. So that's kind of cool to take to the grave.
And that was right after SoundScan came out, and that kind of, I was, you know, I'm a music nerd, followed tons of bands, you know, basically all growing up. And I can't believe some of these artists, like after they were established, didn't ever debut at number one. And you hear all these kind of shady stories now about how that stuff was counted before SoundScan. So I think you guys kind of delivered on that promise that, yeah, people are buying this shit.
Yeah, it was cool, you know. Yeah, when I heard about SoundScan, I was like kind of nervous, but I'm like, well, you know, I saw, and we both did. We saw the buzz that was going on, and we saw the momentum. We knew the momentum that we had, and we were like, you know, it's possible we debut at number one. It is definitely possible. This may happen. And then Snake, we were waiting for. Our bus was parked in New Jersey at a central location. We were all getting dropped off, and I was in the back lounge reading the newspaper, and Snake came in. He goes, hey, congratulations, because I didn't want to know anything until – I didn't want to know numbers. Yeah. I just wanted to – when it happened, it happened. And if we came in number one, we came in number one. If we didn't, more power to whoever did, you know. So Snake came in. He goes, congratulations. I go, am I pregnant? And he said, he goes, we got a number one record. I was like, awesome. And then just the other side of me, I said to him, who's releasing next week? He goes, Van Halen. And I go, well, it was great while it lasted. Yeah. but it was cool, man. It was really cool that happened. And, it was cool that SoundScan happened when it did.
Yeah.
You know, if we came out a week later or 2 weeks later in between other big releases, would it have happened? Who knows? Probably because of the momentum that we had, but you never know. And you just got to take it in the win column, man. It's a pretty cool thing.
Absolutely. And I remember when I heard you guys were going to have Pantera as the opening act, my initial reaction was like, that's a fucking horrible idea. I went to the show. I was wrong. It worked.
It was something, man. I'll tell you what, the demographic switched drastically when they opened up for us. It was like a
lot more room in the ladies' room between shows.
The men's room had the long lines. But I'll tell you what, man, bringing those guys and just seeing what they did was the best thing we could have done for ourselves, because I don't want to say we were jaded, but we were going in that direction, you know, because you have all that experience. The first tour lasted the better part of 2 years, you know, and so it's just one of those things. And then you see these guys come out with the fire in them, man. And they are just laying it down every single night. And you're like, oh, okay, we got to be better than that, or at least as good as it. And just the friends that we made, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Out of those guys and their crew. And it was just incredible, man. And let me say this, Dimebag was one of the most creative people I have ever met in my damn life. That guy was always either writing songs, making videos, just doing everything that was on a creative level, and it just blew me away. It blew me away. It wore me out sometimes because I was like, how do I keep up with this guy? You know what I mean? And we lost a lot when we lost time, for sure.
One of a kind.
Yeah, man.
Why such a long gap between that record and Subhuman Race? I mean, especially for that time, like it was almost 4 years.
Yeah. After Slave was done, things were so bad internally, like really bad. Just didn't get along. There were a few of us that didn't get along from day one, but kept putting it aside, and then we'll do it for this much money, and we'll do it for this much money, and it just got, it was putting Band-Aid over Band-Aid over Band-Aid over Band-Aid until you couldn't see the infection anymore, but it was there. And then after that, we just we needed a breather, you know what I mean? And by the end of the whole cycle of Slave to the Grind, grunge kind of started peeking its head out. And I'll never forget when we were over in Europe and we had LA Guns on tour with us. Tracy's a fan of punk rock, as I am. And we had our cassettes and was like, hey, man, let's get together, get some beers. And after the show, we'll go listen to some punk rock. So we're up in my room and we're listening to stuff. He goes, hey, I want to play this for you. He goes, they're kind of punk rock. Let me know what you think. And he pops it. He goes, it's an advance I got. And he pops the tape in. I'm like, man, it's raw. I don't think it's punk. What's their name? He goes, Nirvana.
Hmm.
And I go, oh. I go, what label are they on? He goes, Geffen. I go, you realize we're fucked, right? It was just like, the shit was so catchy. You couldn't deny it. Like him or hate him. It was just so damn catchy. And he's like, why? And I go, man. I said, why is a major label signing something like this that's so raw and so absolutely at the other end of the spectrum than our genre, unless it's a changing of the guard? And so we both kind of scratched our head and then threw in some Dead Kennedys, and that that was fine. And then, it happened. But it has to happen, man. It has to happen. And things have to change or they get stale. But we're lucky enough. We're one of the bands that – had enough success, and that we have songs that have meant a lot to people that they want to continue hearing. And as long as people want to keep listening, we're going to keep playing them.
Yeah, for sure. Going back to the punk rock thing, I know you're a big Ramones guy just from, I don't know, T-shirts and interviews over the year. Plus, he recorded the one song. But I assume your punk influence has come from that kind of the first wave of punk from the mid-70s forward there?
Oh, yeah, like Dead Kennedys, Sex Pistols, Ramones, Dead Boys.
Okay.
You know, all that kind
JFA?
Of
JFA?
I heard of them.
Okay.
May have heard them, but were they from that era?
Yeah, they definitely were. But they were kind of like in that scene with Black Flag.
Okay.
And see, early Suicidal. I guess that's a little later, isn't it? Yeah, that's 80s.
Yeah, that's 80s. I mean, I got into – I liked Suicidal a lot. I definitely like some Black Flag. But, yeah, now that you mention it, I remember seeing their name a lot alongside of bands of that ilk.
My timing was a little off. Now I'm thinking about it. It was like where it was skateboarding kind of boomed in Midwest there, the early 80s there. So
yeah.
Well, you're a Jersey guy. What about the Misfits?
You know what? It was so close that I guess I just kind of didn't pay attention. I mean, I like some of the Misfits stuff. But yeah, I was still, they creeped in right in kind of in the center of the Ramones and all that stuff. Ramones were definitely 70s or
well, some people are Ramones guys and some are Misfits people. I mean, I think they're both great bands, but
yeah without a doubt. Ramones are probably my favorite band. It's funny, I was watching, I don't know if you ever saw it, but the punk rock movie. Have you seen that?
I don't think so. It's called the punk rock movie.
The punk rock movie.
I have not now.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's the name of it. There's two or three. I've been watching so many punk documentaries. I may be. Anyway, they have all like old footage from Ramones and all the bands we're talking about, Sex Pistols and Clash and and the Slits and all these bands. And the movie was done, and I told my friend about it, and he's like, well, how was it? I go, it was really, really good. Like, it was a great documentary because there was no narration or anything. But I go, you realize why the Clash, Ramones, and Sex Pistols are the big three out of the whole punk rock scene from back in the day, because you just watch them and you listen to them, and it's like they were so good. Like, what they did for their genre was like, you know, like what Kiss and the New York Dolls and Alice Cooper did for the whole glam thing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And they were just so good, and they gelled so well, like, for players that weren't the best players in the world by any means, but they just gelled so well together, and what they made was so monumental and so important, and you know, and this film makes you realize that. You're just like, wow, okay, I get it. Because a lot of times people will call their band punk rock as an excuse because they suck.
Yeah.
It's like, punk rock, you know, and I'm like, nah, that's not really punk rock. Yeah, so, but yeah, that movie's really good. You should check it out.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I just loved, I mean, like I said, it was hard, you know, especially living in a small town, to get your hands on too much punk rock. But I latched onto it pretty quickly, and it was weird because I was also just a huge fan of things like Motley Crue and Warrant, and I didn't really fit in a spot for people with both those things, so I had to have almost two groups of friends. But
right.
But no, that stuff is I assume you're not a huge fan of like the pop punk of like the 90s into the, you know, I don't know, like the Blinks, the Arena 182s, Fall Out Boy, that kind of stuff.
You know what? It's cool. As far as like Green Day is real punk to me. Like, okay. they could have been in the 70s, man. Like, they're the real deal. Yeah, a lot of the other ones, I the whole thing with pop and punk, when you say them together, it's just it you know, it's like jumbo shrimp. What the hell does that mean? You know?
Oxymoron.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to your band. I promise you I only have one question about Sebastian Bach, and I don't think I've heard other people ask it, because it's more of a question based on an observation. So I'm really just taking advantage that I have someone that was there to see if I'm on point or not. Hopefully I don't piss you off.
All right.
Look, there's no shortage of bands that have pretended to make nice in an effort to reunite and for the fans or for the money or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that there's this much time has passed and it's never happened. It's never really even seemed like it was ever close, at least from the outside. And this is all from just my personal perspective. I'm not touching on any inside information. It feels like, from where I'm at, that there is something between him and the band or someone in the band that is like a line that you just don't come back from. Like, it's not just like he was an asshole and hard to deal with. There's something more there. Am I on base or am I just totally off?
You're off base. I mean, it's just, there's nothing, there was no one event.
Okay.
You know, because people are like, why do you hold a grudge? And I'm like, I'm not holding a grudge. You know what I mean? It's like I was telling you before, there was members of the band that just didn't get along from day one.
Okay.
And we toughed it out. We had success. Awesome. But yeah, it just, there's just a few of us there were like, you know, we're having fun, man. Mm-hmm. Scotty, Snake, and I are having a blast. We're doing tons of shows. And, you know, another misconception is people think that we're all broke. It's like, You don't sell, you know, 20 million records worldwide and not unless you blew it all. But it's just like, I have a conception that we're broke and that we should get together and do one show. And it's like, okay, where would you like that show? Would you like it in your backyard and make it easy for you?
Yeah.
It's like, people just say stuff. They don't know the,
right.
the ins and outs of everything. And it's just, you know what? We're having a blast. We are absolutely having a blast. We got two guys in the band that we couldn't get along with better. We're, you know, three of us are in our 50s. And, you know, it's just, It is what it is, man. But yeah, there was no one event. It was just, you know, some people get along, some people don't get along. You know,
it was just speculation on my part. I definitely am not trying to convince you to change whatever you want to do. I don't really, as a fan, as someone who looks at bands, as someone who's been in a band, I realize most of these things aren't as exciting as far as what separates people. It's the same shit that separates friends who get in an argument or something. It's really just typically not that interesting. But almost everybody that's been in your position with your level of success, there's been at least some dalliance. You know what I mean? Like a one-off show at least. But you guys have stayed pretty true to it. So, you know, whatever. Keep doing what you want to do. It's your life, man.
That's our plan.
We got the records still. If we want to go back and be nostalgic, it's there with I've seen you a bunch of times since Sebastian's been out of the band. I've never been disappointed.
Awesome. Have you seen us with ZP?
I have twice.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, he's the man. Jesus, the first gig he played with us, Scotty leans over to me while we're playing. And he goes, "This is the best singer we've ever had." Just plain and simple, Scotty, man. It just not saying Scotty's simple, but he says stuff plain and simple, right to the point. "This is the best singer we ever had." And I'm like, "Yep." So it's all good.
He sounds killer. I'm actually looking forward to hearing him on record. And let's get to that. You guys are currently in the studio. Well, it sounds like it's kind of you guys work on it when you have time. I mean, you are busy playing live quite a bit.
It's making me insane, by the way, because we play so much. We got all the rhythm tracks done, some of the back. We're just doing it piecework, you know what I mean? So it's making me insane. Because I like getting stuff done from beginning to end and just taking the time off, but you know, it's not like it used to be where we tour and get on a bus and tour the world for a year and a half and then go in and do a record. Now it's the landscape is so drastically changed, so that's the way we're doing it. And
and you're working with Michael Wagner again, is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
What's it like working with him? I've met him. He's a very nice gentleman. Is there something that he brings as a producer that you really like to, or is it just kind of a chemistry thing?
Yeah, well, both. We got a great chemistry because we're all dear friends. And you know, his thing is let the band be the band. And that's what, that's why we chose him in the first place. He said that when we met with him, the first time we met with him, that and his track record, obviously. But he said that Snake and I looked at each other right away after, I mean, we met probably with about five or six other producers, big names. And we just never really got a vibe. And when Michael said that, we're like, all right, because we're very territorial, man. We're very, very territorial. We're just like
Jersey boys.
Yeah, man. Through and through. And it's just like, all right, these are our songs. This is our band. This is how we want to play it and this and that. And he said, I want the band to be the band. He goes, but at least hear my ideas. And you know what? Every band that I've produced since, I've instilled the same, thought process. I just like, okay, at least listen to my ideas. You could tell me they suck, but at least listen and try them. And try them a couple times. If you hate them, then we don't do them. So that's how Michael approached us. And, you know, him and I have been very close since the record and have always stayed in touch no matter where we lived. And, you know, a few marriages later, a couple other states, we both end up in Tennessee, living a half an hour from each other.
Yeah, right on. You mentioned that you met with a few other producers for the first record. Any chance you can name some of them, or I'm just curious?
We met with Rick Browdy. Who
else? Did the Poison record, right?
He did Poison and Faster Pussycat, I believe. Met with Mick Jones from Foreigner.
No.
We met with who else did we meet with? Oh my god, I can't believe I forget his name. He produced Ozzy.
Norman.
Max Norman. We met with Max and met with Mike Rose, and you know, it's just all super talented guys. It just what we talked about with each other, it didn't sit, you know. And they went on to more success, and we went on to our success.
Sure. And again, this is the completion of the trilogy that you were working on, right? The No, I'm blanking it. The Revolution thing.
Rebellion. Yeah.
Okay. Rebellion. Yeah. Sorry. I said Revolution. Sorry.
Rebellion Chapter 3. Yep. And it's going to be a full length instead of an EP. And we're pretty damn excited about it, man.
You're going to have Johnny go back, or Johnny, you're going to have ZP go back and redo Johnny's vocals on the first two?
We may pick songs off of it and do it, or just do some live. We do We Are the Damned live, and Z has made it his own and changed little things here and there that really make it stand out. And so we may go back. I don't know if we'll cut it in the studio or just cut it live or something, and then, you know, we'll figure that out. But yeah, we're psyched.
Awesome. So we're looking forward to that in 2020, maybe, is what I'm hearing.
Well, it'll be 2020 for sure.
Okay. One thing we should mention is that you're about to be inducted into the Rock Gods Hall of Fame. That's kind of how you came under my radar with this whole thing. What can you tell me about your induction coming up?
Wow. I wish I could be there. We're in the studio. I believe it's this Sunday. It was total surprise to me. Absolutely 100% of a surprise. And I'm thoroughly honored about it. It's pretty cool when you're this far into your career and you're thought of enough to, you know, get stuff like this, be inducted into stuff like this. And I just, I was kind of speechless when I was told. I was like, really? And I thought about it. I was like, really? So it's cool, man. I'm in really good company. And it's, you know, it's the more I think about it, the cooler it gets.
You can't make the ceremony. Would you like to give your acceptance speech right now?
I actually videotaped one.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited about it.
But yeah, that's a Sunday at Canyon Club in Agoura Hills, California, is what I got in front of me. But are any other members of the band inducted? Yeah.
Not that I'm aware, no.
You're the first. All right. You had the number one record after SoundScan. Now you're also the first member of Skid Row to be inducted into the Rock Gods Hall of Fame. Are you going to lobby for the other members to get in at some point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even Sebastian?
Next question.
Oh, man. Rachel, I really appreciate your time. You were a good sport with me, it was a lot of fun. Maybe we should have you back on when the record comes out.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to do it.
Thank you, Rachel. And if I didn't say so, it was an honor to talk to you tonight. I've been a big fan. Your music did mean a lot to me at a time in my life when it really helped out a lot. You know what I mean? Just being a teenager and dealing with shit. I never forget that kind of stuff with the artists that I leaned on. So I
love these stories. They never get old, dude. I swear to God, they never get old.
Hey, best of luck with everything. You're going off to Europe next, right? Actually, you just came back and you're going out again?
Yeah, we're going for the fourth time this year. Europe has kind of become a commute.
Nice.
At this point. If you want to listen, we'll keep playing.
Yeah, all right. Well, good luck with all that. The holidays are coming up, so happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas, and all the best, man.
You as well, dude. I'll see you soon. Fire and swine.
That I'm talking about would have been the year Tony was still in the band. Anyway, I was waiting to speak with Jack at the. There's like a little room underneath the stage where, like, kind of a dressing room, I suppose.
Yeah.
You guys all came in, and I just while I was waiting, I just said hello. So.
Oh, okay. my brain was always somewhere else when he was in the band.
Oh boy.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.